Anne Celebrezze had joined us. I'd done the rather corny thing of completely dismissing protocol, except having Muriel on my right. In passing a tray of flowers, if you chose a red tulip, you sat at the place at the table where there was a red tulip, just like Mrs. Smith from Suburbia. And it happened that Anne Celebrezze sat on my left. She's one of the really good people I've met in Washington. Her warm smile is an accurate mirror of her warm and gentle heart and character. We had a good time talking about Spanish class and our children, and from the chatter around the table, so did everybody have a good time. I will never learn to be a continental diner. We had two wines and too much but delicious food. At a pause in the conversation, Trudy did the exactly right thing and said, "Muriel, I think all of us would like it if you'd tell us about your trip to the Far East." Mostly for Muriel, I believe it really was being with her husband when she knew he was doing something very important and very difficult, and therein lay the significance and the pleasure for her. The birthday cake was a smashing success, beautifully decorated with a spray of red roses and with pictures of Muriel's life, ranging from a young one surrounded by her small children and a very bouncing Hubert, the one from the inauguration where she's dancing with Lyndon and I with Hubert, the one in front of Monticello, all the cabinet wives lined up beside us. All of this is Bessie's doing, and she's great at it. Then we open the rest of the presents, and what a bright bunch of women these are. Liu Dolls was given with a poem, which she'd written about 7 o'clock that morning as soon as she'd gotten Stu off to the office, in praise of Muriel's many fine qualities. There were only two absent. Mrs. John Gardner, who'd gone to California for the birth of her first grandchild, and Lydia Katzenbach, in bed with a cold, who sent an absolutely zany pair of dark glasses. Without identification, we could almost have recognized them as being her gift. And a delightful accumulation of amusing things, including one sentimental and valuable one, from Trudy Fowler's own kitchen, an open hearth colonial kitchen dating back to the late 18th century, in which all of her friends gather for entertainments. The gift was a mold, itself more than 100 years old, to put cheeses or jellies in for a lovely buffet. Next on the program, and it is here that I began to feel that I had a captive audience, who I really tried to explain that it was only for those who felt self-indulgent enough to take a couple of extra hours off from the day's obligations. And would those who had to go to the dentist or pick up a child or go to a tea or a committee meeting please say goodbye the minute they wanted to. But anyhow, next on the program, we went down to the movie theater to see about 20 minutes of my home movies, the melodramas, My Mother Was a Lady, with explanations from me about how and when it was done. Last April in Texas, when Margie and I took pictures of the Blue Bonnets, and which later showed the U-Dolls and many other people we know. And then the trip of all the cabinet wives down into Virginia last May. At about that point, several did leave, and the rest of us settled down to see A Thousand Clowns with Jason Robards, a bright, whimsical story, totally unrelated to our lives, which are a pretty regimented lot, with due consideration for all the rules. Several of the guests drifted out midway, feeling, I'm afraid, rather embarrassed, but three of us stayed to the end, Muriel and Margie and I, and it was 5:30 when the day came to an end. We'd had pink lemonade and popcorn passed during the show, one of Bessie's delightful thoughts. But as I assessed the day, I decided that format would work in the relaxed atmosphere of Camp David in the summertime, but not in the busy life of cabinet wives in the rather formal surroundings of the White House. So much for good intentions. I'm devoted to Muriel and wanted to have the party for her to gently underline that point. What a day of eating, just scarcely an hour and a half before the next party would begin. And this one, thought of by Lyndon sometime Sunday, and nearly all the guests chosen by him, the invitations phoned Monday morning, and the list completed by Bess and me, turned out to be a smashing success in honor of the 80th birthday of Mr. Justice Hugo Black and Elizabeth. We gathered at 7:30 in the Yellow Room, Black's accompanied by his daughter JoJo and her husband, Dr. and Mrs. Mario Pesaresi, and his son and daughter-in-law, the Hugo Blacks Jr. from Miami, and Elizabeth's son and daughter-in-law, Mr. and Mrs. Fred DeMerritt. Once more, this was a late birthday party. Justice had celebrated his birthday on the weekend, and his children, who had gathered from Miami, Florida, and somewhere in New Jersey, had hardly had time to get home before another call came. Would they return for a party at the White House? I felt it was a great compliment to us and the justice that they did. Only one couldn't. That was his son in New Mexico, who was filing to run for the state senate. He must do it in person. If he returned, he would miss the filing date. Since his host and his honoree were the men they were, they heartily approved his decision to stay and file. Clinton had suggested that we ask the Sparkmans in the Hills and the congressman from his district, Bob Jones. Only Senator Sparkman and Mrs. Jones were there. The Hills, a dinner they couldn't get out of. Ivo ill. Bob Jones in Germany. But I was delighted to have some Alabama representation, this great man from Alabama, and a young admirer from my own office, Doug Caters, whom I grow fonder of all the time. And from the old days we shared together, Tom Corcoran and Ben Cohen. I remember a party honoring some anniversary of Mr. Justice Black's going on the court. It had been held at Tom Corcoran's house during Peggy's lifetime. It was a great pleasure for me to have them both there. And from the court, there was the Chief Justice and Mrs. Warren. Bill Douglas, ruddy-faced and full of conversation about the Big Bend country. He says it's too late in the season for me to go April 1st. And the Tom Clarks, who have accompanied us to dinner at the Blacks. And the newest Justice, Abe Fortas, who argued before Mr. Justice Black the case for a young Texas Congressman, Lyndon Johnson, who had won by a very slim margin the Democratic nomination for the Senate, and whose name was about to be stricken off of the ballot by the order of a Texas federal judge. Judge and Mrs. Skelly Wrights were very special friends of the Blacks, and the Thurman Arnolds and the Paul Porters, old friends of ours and theirs from the very first years that we knew them, completed the list of 29. It was a successful party from the moment the guests arrived to the last goodbye. I had them alone in the yellow room for about 30 minutes. Lyndon was late. We went in for dinner at 8:30. I had Mr. Justice Black on my right and Bill Douglas on my left. It was a delicious dinner and much talk to Justice about my trip to Alabama. He knew all about it. And I learned about the life that he and Elizabeth lead in a quiet apartment in Florida, which they keep and have several weeks in during recesses in the winter and spring months. But he plays tennis every day. He's hard put to stay up with him. It's only within the last few years that men his son's age can beat him. I thought of my daddy when I noticed how this pleased him. Bill Douglas and I talked about the Texas Explorers Club, Jim Bomers and the Bob Burlesons, and his trips down the Rio Grande. He really roughs it without any help from the Park Service. His book will be out in the fall, but includes a chapter about the Big Bend country and about our own hill country. What a strange man to be so interested in wildflowers. But he is, from the Holy Land to the Edwards Plateau. He assured me that Dr. Correll knew more about the varieties than anybody I could find. I want to get to know him better. With the birthday cake and the champagne, we had toasts. Lyndon's, sentimental, quite a eulogy, and absolutely true. And then the justice's response. Hugh Riley said it sounded like Lyndon was preaching his funeral. And then went on to deliver sort of a capsule of his years in Washington, with references interwoven to how Lyndon had been a part of them. We could have heard a pin drop. I felt a sense of history. I was so delighted that Lyndon, whom only a moment elapses between a thought and the act, caused this party to happen. In the toast, there was one reference to the Patillas, two of whom he had known in his growing up years in Alabama. One of them had been his Sunday school teacher, another a neighbor. I cherished this. I long felt a special closeness to Mr. Justice Black, and this added to it. One of the loveliest lines, a sort of thanks to the Lord, to the world, for all the happiness that has been mine. And then, with a little bow to Elizabeth, one of the principal causes of it now is the lady on the president's right. I loved it all, and so did the other guests. Most of all, I believe, the children. As soon as we were back in the yellow room, I suggested that perhaps the young people, Hugo's and Elizabeth's children, might like to see the Lincoln room and the Queen's room. It turned out, to my amazement, that practically everybody wanted to. I conducted the tour myself, complete with vignettes from the days of Churchill and FDR, and now having Carl Sandburg and his family for tea in the Lincoln room, and finding Lucy in her nightgown surrounded by algebra and Latin and chewed pencils and notebooks, hard at study in the treaty room, just as I was conducting a group on a sightseeing tour, precisely as tonight. Seldom have I had people more appreciative. Lyndon came in bringing pictures and medals and little mementos of the justice and his children and Elizabeth's son. And by 11, everybody was gone, and I had that very female feeling of self-satisfaction at having put on a really good party, though the credit for the real thoughtfulness goes to Lyndon.